18 years ago today, Earth Day 1998, marked a historic victory for Wisconsin's clean water and the clean government safeguards that protect our water. On that day, on the banks of the Wolf River in northeastern Wisconsin, Governor Tommy Thompson signed into law legislation that became known as the mining moratorium. Thompson was not a fan of the legislation, but circumstances had left him little choice but to grin and bear it and go along. A massive, broad, and energetic grassroots coalition of tribes, sportsmen, and common sense conservationists had outmaneuvered Thompson and his friends in the mining industry, including Exxon, then the planet's largest energy corporation. That broad coalition was notable. Two of the main groups composing that coalition, the tribes and the sportsmen, had been in conflict over the tribes' assertion of their treaty rights, their right to spearfish. That adversarial dynamic changed as a proposed mine at Crandon, at the headwaters of the Wolf River, threatened the wild rice beds of the Ojibwe and the sportfish of the Wolf River. Common affection for the pristine waters of the Wolf River watershed united the tribes and the sportsmen, as well as many other groups such as paddlers, to campaign against the mine proposal. Mole Lake Chippewa elder Fran Van Zyl nailed it when she said, "It's not about the mine, it's about the water." The mine proposal was for a metallic sulfide mine, a particularly dangerous and polluting form of mining that frequently leads to long-lasting water pollution and rivers running orange. After blocking the threat of a proposed mine, the citizens' campaign pivoted to a legislative campaign designed to establish a clear and substantial test for any further mine proposals. This "Show Me It Is Safe First" legislation that resulted from that effort simply stated that any mine proposal would have to present evidence of a similar mine operated safely for 10 years and closed for 10 years without any pollution problems. It was a common sense statute espousing fundamental principles of due diligence, but the mining industry hated it. The citizens' campaign was unstoppable, and the legislation passed by astounding margins. The vote in the Assembly was 91-7. In the Senate, it was 21-6. Question for you all, and for me. When we see this kind of grassroots, place-based, love of the land coalition, uniting diverse groups of people to act for the common good, aren't we seeing a mass outbreak of citizen spirituality? Isn't it in our interest to duplicate these movements and look for local opportunities to convene similar discussions and campaigns? Worth noting The victorious coalition that prevailed in the Crandon campaign bears a remarkable resemblance to the movement that brought us a notable victory last November. The campaign that blocked construction of the Keystone XL tar sands crude oil pipeline, that threatened Nebraska's groundwater, the Ogalla Aquifer. Once again, tribes played a large part, this time in what came to be known as the Cowboy and Indian Alliance. What started as a local skirmish in Nebraska, pitting tribes, ranchers, and farmers against a proposed crude oil pipeline, grew into a pitched battle over the creation of new infrastructure to support the fossil fuel industry and one of their most extreme products, tar sands crude oil. An early hearing on the proposed pipeline took place in May 2010 in York, Nebraska, west of Lincoln. For local people living along or near the proposed pipeline's route, the issue had enormous personal significance. It didn't help any that the pipeline was basically an export scheme. It was designed to get the crude oil to the Gulf of Mexico and then on to the world market. About 100 ranchers and farmers, concerned that the impacts of oil spills from the proposed pipeline would lead to land and water contamination, spoke out against the pipeline at the hearing. Jane Cleed, director of a progressive advocacy group, Bold Nebraska, was in the audience at the hearing. Cleed moved into action, organizing locals against the pipeline. On a parallel track, Clayton Thomas Mueller, a Cree Indian and organizer from the Indigenous Environmental Network from Canada, began organizing among the tribes along the pipeline route. Canadian tribes are known as First Nations, and the Alberta tar sands extraction and transportation had a horrible impact on the Canadian First Nations and their land and water. As that Nebraska organizing moved forward, the campaign picked up allies in the national environmental movement. Author and activist Bill McKibben and others sensed an opportunity in the pipeline proposal. Unlike many climate issues, such as power plant emissions, the pipeline was easy to understand. A series of demonstrations in the nation's capital followed, and environmentalists heeded the call to step forward and support the citizens of Nebraska in their campaign. Notably, a demonstration in August of 2011 featured a total of 1,200 activists and citizens volunteering to risk arrest. Day after day, for 2 weeks, a new group stepped forward, sat down at the White House fence, and were arrested. It was the largest act of civil disobedience on this continent during this century. Terry Wiggins and Joanne Backer of First Unitarian Milwaukee Congregation were among those arrested. Another Keystone demonstration had 15,000 people surround the White House. In addition, a rally with Reject and Protect as its theme saw teepees set up on the National Mall while ranchers and tribes, the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, paraded on horseback protesting the proposed pipeline. The creative tactics weren't just saved for Washington, D.C. Back home in Nebraska, the campaign held a barn raising, erecting a barn with solar panels on land directly in the pipeline's proposed route. Another action saw Bold, Nebraska hosting a pumpkin carving party in the fall of 2011. Hundreds of supporters surrounded the governor's mansion with jack-o'-lanterns that spelled out, quote, 91 leaks and zero regulations is scary. A reference to a prediction about the number of times that the Keystone Pipeline was predicted to fail and leak. The campaign worked. Against what initially seemed like overwhelming odds, it was a spectacular example of grassroots organizing and effectiveness. Its relentless street theater and never give up energy prevailed. Eventually, President Obama felt empowered to do the right thing, and in November of 2015, he rejected the permit application for the Keystone XL pipeline. A new phrase came into being, the, quote, Keystoneization of pipeline proposals. Industry cynics saw this as NIMBY, N-I-M-B-Y, or not in my backyard. Myself and many others do not accept that label. Yes, it is natural to defend our local communities, but it is also logic to link our local defense to those things, such as tar sands, that threaten all life on this planet. So we don't see this as NIMBY, we see this as NOPE, N-O-P-E, not on planet Earth. Let's bring this discussion home. Home to Wisconsin, home to Heartland, home to Waukesha County and neighboring parts of southeastern Wisconsin. It turns out we have opportunities right here to apply some of the lessons and tactics of the Crandon and Keystone campaigns. Big Oil has big ugly plans for Wisconsin and the Great Lakes region. Wisconsin is being targeted as a transportation corridor, both for a major expansion of tar sands crude oil pipelines and for a pipeline on rails. Mile-long trains of tank cars carrying explosive crude oil from the Bakken region of North Dakota. 40 miles west of here, in western Jefferson County and eastern Dane County, Enbridge, the Canadian Pipeline Company, wants a major expansion of their tar sands crude oil pipeline system. The pipeline corridor runs from Superior, Wisconsin in the north to Delavan and points south. Enbridge's expansion here is essentially an export scheme, an expansion of the same dynamics we saw with the Keystone proposal in Nebraska. The tar sands industry needs access to salt water to ship its product to the world market. 4 miles south of here, Canadian Pacific Railroad tracks carry a steady stream of Bakken crude oil trains through Heartland, as well as past Pewaukee Lake and through Milwaukee. Worth noting, the crude oil train that exploded in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec on July 6, 2013, killing 47 people, traveled those tracks on its way to Quebec. It could have been us. It could have been Tulsa. It could have been the Third Ward in Milwaukee. These pipelines and oil trains represent extreme oil products. Extreme in their extraction methods in the horrendous wasteland we know as the tar sands in Alberta, and the fracking oil wells of North Dakota. and extreme in the danger to the communities the oil is transported through. Notably, Wisconsin sand mines feed the fracking process in the oil fields, only to have explosive oil trains return to Wisconsin, sometimes passing those sand mines. Tar sands crude oil is virtually impossible to clean up after being spilled in the water. Unlike conventional crude oil, it sinks. An Enbridge tar sands pipeline spill in Michigan's Kalamazoo River took $1.2 billion to clean up. Bakken crude oil has a notorious history of exploding into 20-story high fireballs after train wrecks. Wisconsinites have a long, proud history of questioning and blocking polluting industries. The Crandon Mine campaign and the recent successful statewide effort to block efforts to develop an iron mine in the Pinoki Hills are part of that history. Tar sands pipelines and crude oil trains threaten our water, our community's health, and our planet's health. We are hardly alone in our concerns. Landowners in central Wisconsin are organizing against the proposed pipeline expansion and have formed an organization called 80 Feet is Enough. 80 feet referring to the current width of the Enbridge pipeline corridor, which they want to expand to add even more pipes. At 11 a.m. this morning, in fact, a forum on the proposed pipeline expansion is happening at First Presbyterian Church in Marshfield. The campaign to counter Enbridge is gathering steam, with the Wisconsin Safe Energy Alliance, 350 Madison, and the Sierra Club pitching in alongside the landowners. Jane Klebe of Bold, Nebraska was here last week to mentor the efforts. Further upstream in the pipeline, citizens and tribes in Minnesota are campaigning against Enbridge's expansion plans. The surge in oil traffic, a pipeline on rails, has produced a ferocious response from citizens in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and across the nation. Citizens Acting for Rail Safety, an organization I'm active in, has chapters in Milwaukee, Watertown, La Crosse, and the Twin Cities. Now is the time to mobilize citizen action and insist that elected officials stand up for not only clean water and healthy communities, but the clean government procedures that protect clean water. As we organize to counter these threats, let us remember the time-tested truths and bedrock spirituality that were the strength and success of the Crandon and Keystone campaigns. Question for you all, and for me. When we see this kind of grassroots, place-based, love of the land coalition, uniting diverse groups of people to act for the common good, aren't we seeing a mass outbreak of citizen spirituality? Isn't it in our interest to duplicate these movements and look for local opportunities to convene similar discussions and campaigns? Scan our Wisconsin history. Examine the citizens' campaigns in Nebraska, Minnesota, and elsewhere. And one thing is clear. We have done it before, and we can do it again. Thus ends our sermon message this morning.